Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
Bring the sabor with new Modelo Chelada Fresa Picante. A mouth-watering mix of authentic Mexican beer, bold strawberry flavor, and a hint of spice. New Modelo Chelada Fresa Picante. Bring the sabor. Drink responsibly. Modelo Chelada flavored beers. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Well, a very enchanting young lady comes in, and we do a nice long-form interview with her, Akilah Hughes. Very smart, very funny, and I predict you're going to be hearing a lot more from this young lady. I know I sound like Johnny Carson now. And the news is coming as well. First, Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? I bet you do one of those two things. So, you want to bundle? Good. Easy. Bundling policies is easy at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and your renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Why not make this one easy at geico.com? Get a quote. See just how much you could be saving at Geico. That is geico.com.
If you want to spice up any occasion, bring the sabor with Modelo Chelada. A mouth-watering mix of authentic Mexican beer, bold fruit flavors, and a hint of spice. Bring the heat with Sandia Picante, a taste of the tropics with mango y chile, or the citrus burst of limón y sal. There's bold flavor in every can. Modelo Chelada, bring the sabor. Drink responsibly. Modelo Chelada flavored beers, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
The Carolla Drinks Wine Club has arrived. We're bringing you all the bottles you can drink and more perks than you know what to do with. For those who just want to dip their toes into the wine club, our 3 and 6 pack clubs will get you 3 shipments a year, 10% off all wine orders, and a DVD of the long-awaited Uppity, plus more and more goodies throughout the year. For those who want to dive in head first, our Case Club will get you 3 shipments a year, 10% off all wine orders, a DVD of Uppity, and 2 tickets to the Carolla Family Barbecue, featuring the entire ACS family, a lineup of comedians, all the food and booze you can consume, a photo with Adam, Bald, and Gina in the ACS studio, and a private concert from The Offspring. But wait, there's more. For renewing Case Club members only, you'll get a private tequila and cigar tasting with the unholy trinity of Adam, Drew, and Garrigus before the barbecue even begins. For those who want to attend the party of the year without having delicious booze sent to your door 3 times a year, tickets are available for sale at CorollaDrinks.com. So prep your livers. The Carolla Drinks Wine Club is back.
Akilah Hughes is here, writer, comedian, YouTuber. She has a book out called, obviously, Stories from My Timeline. It's available now on Amazon as we speak. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you, too. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this journey of yours. We're talking off the air about you being a spelling bee champion as a young person and that being a lot of your identity.
Yeah, I mean, as a kid. Now it's, yeah. No one really respects spelling, so I let it go, you know? But it was just a thing that I was good at. I could look at a word, memorize it. This is the most boring conversation I've ever started.
Well, no, I'm very interested
in this.
You're
like, tell me about these letters.
I'm super interested, and I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. We just replayed an interview I did with Kobe Bryant, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
And he was telling this story about when he was 11 years old and he was playing in the summer league, and it's a storied league, and his dad was a big player there and his uncle back mm-hmm. in the day, and he sucked, didn't score a point. So at 11, he didn't score a point.
And, wow.
and people are like making fun of him, telling him to quit, and he came back and he owned it and he was like the best player in the yeah. league by 13. Yeah. And I said, do you reflect on that now? And mm-hmm. he said, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being good at something.
Yeah, when you're a kid.
I mean, how often do you sort of look back on it? Do you get some strength from it? I don't mean strength, but you
yeah.
use it, you know?
I mean, I use it. I think that, you know, obviously he's a savant at basketball. He was. And so I don't have that strong of a connection to it. I do think that, like, I was probably beyond spelling when I lost embarrassingly because I just misheard what they said, and then I went to the regional spelling bee and I spelled a different word. The word was scoundrel. I heard scandal, so I spelled scandal, and I was like, okay, I guess that's, like, I'm done with this. And after that age anyway, there wasn't, like, more spelling bees. But then the movie came out, so it was kind of like more like PTSD of just like, really? Like, we're just going to keep reliving this embarrassing moment.
Akilah and the Bee, which we kept talking about before the show, too, trying to figure out if that was you or not.
I know. I wish.
So sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's something you just have born with, or do you think it was forged by some pain or discomfort or wanting? You know, people always go, I had to be funny or otherwise I'd get my ass kicked. But look, if my mom had to be funny, she'd just get her ass kicked. She's not funny.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know what I'm
exactly.
saying? You can't just be funny.
Right. I don't think that it's natural for most people. I think that they're it's a little bit of both. I definitely think nature and nurture. For me, I was the youngest of four. And it's a talkative family. So I think that the way you could, like, get a break in conversations to make everyone else laugh. So you could be like, okay, so actually I had some important news to discuss as a 4-year-old at this table. And also I think I just had funny siblings. And so I just wanted to fit in with them. So I think part of it was just, you know, growing up around people who are always cutting up because we were broke, and that's what you do when you're broke. So you just make jokes about things. But I also think, you know, my mother always loved Saturday Night Live, and she loved In Living Color, and she loved, you know, all of those shows. And so kind of maybe inappropriately, I saw that stuff when I was really young, but it also was the youngest of four. So it's like they're not going to keep waiting for me to be able to be old enough to see these things.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, like, it's so great that this is a thing that makes us all so happy. And
It struck me that you're young. You're 30 years old.
Oh, man. Thank you for saying that to
you. You are, but I mean,
my hips are old.
Well, we're talking about Oprah before. So, but here's the thing. So, I used to have a lot of conversations about, like, you're a young woman of color. Mm-hmm. How did you know you could do this? Or who are your role models? But you're 30. You saw it. You had people on SNL. You had people out in general. There's just funny black women, successful black women in show business and media. And you didn't have that when you were 9. Like, who do I look up to?
Right.
Or there's no one that looks like me is on TV. You saw in Living Color.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I honestly don't think that, like obviously there could be better representation, and, like, the representation for, you know, a high school black girl, like, is pretty much, like, still doesn't exist. Like, that, I feel like there are genres that are still, like, a little behind, or, like, there's just less reflection there. But I do think that you're right. There was definitely, like, I don't think that I had the problem of I haven't seen this, so I don't think it's possible. I also, like, my first election I voted in, Obama was the nominee, and, like, it was very obvious that he was going to, like, win.
Oh, that's your first presidential election.
Yeah.
So you're the first election you vote in is 08. And so we have a black president who's 2 terms.
Yeah.
So you're not growing up, like, I mean, I'm older than you, obviously. I'm 25 years older than you. So there used to be a lot of discussion on, like, could there ever be a black president? Or, well, if there was, he'd be assassinated, like, at the inauguration. But
is it that,
you didn't
like, the
see
whole,
that.
Right. Like, isn't that the whole plot of head of state is, like, Chris Rock could never be president?
Well, it was, you know, if you want to talk about comedy, it was the comedy probably black comedians doing, if there was a black president, he wouldn't make it past the first day or whatever that was.
That's right.
So you grew up in a world where you figured you could do what you wanted, but it's still a low percentage job.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the entertainment, we are very lucky. The fact that I get to talk to you is like, it's not a thing most people get to do, I assume. I don't think that you're standing on the corner giving out interviews.
I never think of it that way, but I'm flattered to think of it that way and that you think of it that way.
Yeah.
And there's this thing was so, when I was coming up, there was just a few jobs. Mm-hmm. There wasn't all these Hulu and Quibi and Deep Cable and just so many shows you hadn't heard of. There was like a couple of sitcoms. You knew those sitcoms. You knew those actors. Yeah. They had a couple of writers, and that was the gig.
Yeah.
So when I was coming up, I had to kind of figure out a way to defy some of those odds. Now there's an oversaturation problem. Now everyone's on TV.
It's true.
And everyone has some sort of cable deal or YouTube channel. And now it's the opposite. You have to figure out how to define yourself in a sea of humanity.
Oh, for sure. I definitely think that you're exactly right. It's oversaturated. I was telling someone the other day, like, there are more celebrities now than ever.
Sure.
Like, there, you know, if I go on Instagram, there are thousands of people who have over a million followers that I've never heard of.
Right.
And somehow, like, they mean everything to these followers. And so it is a weird problem. I think that in my own, like, self-reflection and sort of laughing about it, I feel like every time I'm about to do something and be like, I achieved this thing, it becomes available to everyone. And I'm like, damn it. I worked really hard. Like, I mean, a dumb example, YouTube used to have a thing in the beginning where not everyone was making money. You had to have a certain number of subscribers. You had to be brand friendly, all of these things. And I worked hard at it. I was like, I have friends who have done this. They're very happy. They were buying homes. And it was the recession when I was starting. And so I was like, that's what I'm going to try to do. And literally, like, the week they were like, you got this. You've done it. I was prepared to brag everywhere. Within 2 days, they were like, we are opening up this partner program to anyone who has Wi-Fi. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. I feel that way about podcasting. When I started coming up on 11 years ago, there's just a handful of people doing it. It's not for good or for bad. There's just a handful of people doing it.
Right.
And now everybody is doing a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm late to the game. Like, that's how many podcasts there are, you know?
I think there may be like 700,000 on
just like
iTunes on Apple alone. I think it's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
And so now we're in a place where everyone has a platform and everyone's words can be heard, but now people are going to have to seek your words out.
Right.
And that's the interesting part. Well, it's also the part where there used to be audiences built in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
like, a demographic that will like this.
It's like they're captive in a certain sense.
Yeah.
It's like
there's
like
nothing else to watch.
listen to. Mm-hmm. I come from radio, and I used to listen to morning radio in Los Angeles, and they'd have morning radio teams have been around for 25, 30 years. Like, they weren't going anywhere. Everyone just listened to that station when they got in their car, and that's who they were, and that's how it was. And then the audience was baked into it because they listened to the radio station.
Right.
Now there's 10,000 stations, and people have to go find your voice out there. It's not just going to be on. And in TV, it used to be lead-ins. You know, the show before you was super popular.
Right.
So then people just hang out and watch your show.
Yeah, they expected it to work out. And people are like, no, I'm also not going to listen to anything or watch anything live anymore. Like,
right.
We are living in the weirdest time in media, I think, because I don't know how this is sustainable over a long period of time. Like, if we just keep growing at this rate, I've read this really interesting article. I don't remember what it was, so I apologize, but it's about the end of nostalgia. And they're like, you can't really be nostalgic for something if not enough people remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And the future of all of these famous people and all of these TV shows and so many podcasts and movies and, you know, there's a billion indie movies, is that none of your friends are going to remember the stuff you remember. So how do you look back on, you know, 2020 in 20 years and say, oh, we all were into this? Like, Game of Thrones might be the end of that, like, group viewing, everybody on a Sunday talking about the same thing. I hope it's not the case, because I mean, then we just have to look forward to the future. Not I.
Well, think about just the theme songs for the cartoons. Like, when I was a kid, if you would have stopped every single kid in my sixth grade and asked them to sing the Flintstones theme song, they would have just gone right into it. They would have launched into it. Or the Beverly Hillbillies or whatever.
I know that
this
one.
Is Gilligan's Island. Like, it was just, everyone just knew it. Now, you know, who the hell could do that with today's sitcom? Or even,
I mean, you can skip the intro now.
Yeah, they just
go. You don't have to watch it.
You'd fast forward right through it. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and so it's interesting. So the nostalgia. So if I sit around with guys that are my age or girls are my age, and we'll talk about stuff that we all remember from our childhood, and it was everywhere.
Yeah,
and there was commercials, and there was the, you know, the local auto dealer had Go See Cal, or I can still tell you that Pete Ellis Dodge is in Long Beach Freeway, Firestone exit, and Southgate. I've never even been there.
But you know,
I know it's Pete Ellis Dodge, Long Beach Freeway, Firestone exit, Southgate. Like, if someone said to me, where's Pete Ellis Dodge? I'd go, get on the Long Beach Freeway and get off on the Firestone exits in Southgate. Yeah. All right, that's baked in.
Yeah.
Never been there, never drove a Dodge.
Yeah.
So. What are we going to do?
Really good at marketing, advertising.
I know.
We just don't live in those times. And it is weird. Like, today, somebody said on Twitter, they were like, if you had to remember one song, like, if somebody had a gun to your head and said, you have to sing this song verbatim, can't miss a word, like, what would you do? And all of the answers were, like, TV show theme songs. Like, I was like, yeah, probably Fresh Prince. Like, I'm not going to mess that up. But if it was something in the past decade, I got nothing. I really don't know.
So true.
I don't remember songs.
Pete Ellis Dodge, Long Beach. I think I could pull that one off.
Is that guy around? Can we, like, get him in here?
I don't think Pete Ellis is. Well,
pour one out for Pete.
Pete Ellis. Pour one out for Pete. Take a little motor oil and dump it on the ground for Pete.
That's what he would have wanted.
So now, and I wonder if we're getting a little disjointed because of this, because there is a part of our society where we need to stay, like, sort of connected by art, I guess, like TV show, some creative, like, pulls you in. Everyone knows the Beatles songs or Michael Jackson or whatever it is. Everyone's just drifting off and going into their own corner and kind of staring at their screen and consuming their own stuff that you don't know about. And they don't know about your stuff.
Right.
How's that going to work when we're driving and you got to make room for somebody to slide in front of you?
Yeah. I mean, in LA, that just doesn't happen. No one lets you over.
But right.
You're right. I think that it's a unique problem. I don't know if it's ever been solved in history. You know what I mean? I'm like, I guess they could burn down the Library of Alexandria again and be like, all right, we got nothing. Let's start over from scratch. But I do feel like we are, not only are we, like, I don't know that we're further apart from each other. I think it's a little bit of both. Like, we are consuming different media and applying it to our lives in different ways. But I also think that we're at a point where too many opinions matter. And so what you end up having then is, like, you have to know about everything to make a statement about anything, or else you're being insensitive. And so I tend to feel like, okay, if I haven't seen this show and I don't know the context of this joke, but I think the meme is funny and I share it on Twitter, I probably shouldn't be taken to task for an out of context gif. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
I don't think that I'm doing anything wrong with that. And I think that that just seems to be where we're at, where everyone's like, everyone has a hill they can die on now. We have more hills than ever.
Well, also, we're doing this micro dissection of everybody.
Yeah.
So it's like every human being, it seems, has some sort of Me Too type moment, you know? So then we're trying to praise them after they die, or we're trying to see if we're going to vote for them, or we're going to whatever. And then somebody goes, yeah, but what about this thing over there? Which, you know, all the greats that we looked up to throughout the years, going back to guys like Kennedy and mm-hmm. Martin Luther King and stuff, they all had a bunch of little side
jobs.
Absolutely,
yeah.
But we didn't look at them as that. We sort of stood back and looked at like the totality of their work and went, are we glad this person was born or not?
Right.
And if the answer is yes, then just fucking relax.
Yeah.
It's like literally, it's like going out on a date and pulling out a jeweler's loop and studying the other person's face and go, did you have a zit in high school? Was that an issue? Because there's a little mark on your forehead.
Like,
and then why ruin the date?
Right.
I'm not saying turn a blind eye to everything.
Right.
I'm just saying
like red flags are still red flags, but also like they're not the end of the world.
Well, everyone's,
we also all have them.
Everyone has a few moments that they go from moments that you weren't proud of to breaking the law, essentially, you know, but it's still all part of kind of the tapestry of being a human being.
Right.
Why do we have to get so granular with everybody?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. And I also think that like to that point as well, there are people who they kind of paint other people as like, okay, if they've had one bad moment, they are the devil. And if they are, and if I don't see them or like if I don't hear about the bad moment, then it doesn't exist, you know? And an example of that might be the other day, I was shooting this show and we set off the fire alarm. And so we had to evacuate this entire building, even though we were only in one room. So a bunch of people in their office jobs were like, great, we get to go to lunch. Like, whatever.
How'd you set off the fire alarm?
We had smoke machines. It was stupid. We should have tried it.
Oh, because we were talking before the show about smoking pot.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that
We smoked a little bit on the set. I wish that was the case. It was much cornier. And people, like when the fire marshal got there, this is a person who literally their job is to sit there and wait for a fire to happen. And it's never happened.
Right.
And so he has to get off his ass and come in and then like see what happened, yell at everybody. And he wasn't especially nice at one time. At one point he said, you know, fuck. And the people, like some of the people I was with were like, he's evil. He's so mean. I'm like, you've never been frustrated at work. Like, I'm pretty sure this guy just didn't want to get up and he had to get up. Like, we can't paint his entire life now because he had an unsavory experience with you when he was like under stress and thought the building was burning down. Like,
right.
We can reserve our judgment for, you know, things that actually matter.
Yeah. Well, also, why are we seeking it out?
Right.
It doesn't improve your life at all.
But, and I think for some people it does. I think that there's a level of, like, they've never faced their own problems. They've never publicly had to acknowledge something they've done wrong. But there is a part of them that says, well, I'm better than that guy. Because I've never cussed in, like, a stressful situation. I'm like, okay, well, I definitely have. And I don't think that I'm the devil. And I think that, yeah, that's probably one of the worst things that is happening with just too many opinions online is that there's this, like someone's going to win Human of the Year if they just like don't have anything anyone can point to that they did wrong.
Well, we do have, we have this insatiable sort of appetite to kind of go like, okay, you have this perfect couple living next door as an example. And at some point you hear them have a big fight, you know, and then you sit down with your partner and you go, you know, the perfect couple over there, not so perfect.
Yeah.
I heard them argue. You know how we argue all the time? They were doing the same shit.
Exactly. Turns out.
And now all of a sudden, somehow you feel like your lot in life's just a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I kind of get it. I kind of get the part where there's the celebrity and there's a picture of them without their makeup and they don't look so great or whatever it is. Like, I get it, but these are snacks. These aren't meals.
Right.
We're making meals out of them now. Like, we're now satiating ourselves. We shouldn't be doing that. There's a little bit of that eavesdropping kind of part of life where it's like, you know, we're talking about like Oprah, you thanked her in your book. Like, you know, every time Oprah puts on a couple pounds, I always go, God, she's rich and she's powerful, but she can't buy that. You know, like she's still got to struggle with it. Mm-hmm. She's still got to work at it.
Right.
She's been celebrating a little too much during the holidays.
Things have been going too well.
You know what? I dropped 7 pounds. So, you know, it's like that little bit of that, little compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Fine. Sort of. Some of it's...
It seems natural.
It's natural. Yeah. It's how human beings work. I get it. But let's not make the whole... Let's not build a life around that.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're giving into that.
And I also think that like, in a lot of ways, it is natural now to do that because we live in a world where everyone is someone you should be comparing yourself to. Like, Oprah was only in tabloids or on her show in the 90s. It's not like you right. could like look at her life every day on Instagram and be like, oh. And so now I think that because there are so many celebrities and we're looking at them all day long, it becomes like it's that but on steroids. It's, oh, you think you're better than me because your house is perfect or you're on this vacation or whatever else. I'm going to wait until there's like one thing wrong and I'm going to blow it up in your comments because like I hate that you seem happier than me, even though we all know this is fake. Like, we all know we're just putting things online because we were told to. Like, the internet needs content, so we're throwing it up there.
Well, there's an element of do you do stand-up?
I used to. I wrote the book, and then I got really bad at writing for, like, the stage.
See, if you go do stand-up, it's like there's going to be a person performing before you. It depends on when you get there, but there's going to be a few mm-hmm. that go on before you. And then there's going to be a few that go on after you.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to figure out where you fit in between those
That's
human
right.
beings. And there is an element of it of, I don't want to stand in the back of the room and have so-and-so on stage just crushing it. And then I go up there and it's palpably different. Like yeah. there's a lot less laughter going on than mm-hmm. there was 8 minutes ago. You
yes.
know, like I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want a light to fall off a grid and smash the guy.
You don't want murder to happen
yes.
so that you can do okay on stage?
I'm not going to untie a sandbag.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is like, I think I'm being properly mm. motivated.
Yeah.
Like, I think I'm being motivated in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are laughing, and I'm going to start going through stuff in my mind and
yeah.
figuring it out what to start with or what to end with
yeah.
or whatever, because that's kind of a healthy form.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is sort of hoping that guy gets a venereal disease.
It is.
Or divorced or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, and I think truly, like, you're in competition with yourself versus being in competition with other people. And I'm like, that is actually the one through line of the people that we celebrate and the things that, like, you know, we consider to be great in culture. It's like that person was no longer competing with everyone else. They were just beating their own. And then they got to a point where it's like, oh, no one's in their league. And that's, I think you're right. That is the healthier option. It's like, okay, maybe I didn't, you know, kill it this show, but I know what would have worked better. And next time I'm going to show up and, you know, maybe Chris Rock is going to drop in and I'm still not going to kill it after him, but I will do better than I did last time. And if I keep doing that enough times, I'll probably get somewhere. Some people don't, but I'll probably get somewhere.
Well, you know, I'm going to, if you don't mind, I want to modify what you just said and you can feel free to disagree. I feel like you are in competition with them,
mm-hmm.
but in order to win, you are in competition with yourself.
That's right.
So if you're an MMA fighter, you're in competition with Conor McGregor,
yeah.
whoever's across the octagon. That
yeah.
is your competition.
Yeah.
But all those days of training, all the 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
road work, you
mm-hmm.
know, two-a-day workouts,
yeah.
you know.
Eating nothing but
right,
raw chicken.
Skinless chicken. Right. That is the self-competition.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part where you have to compete with yourself. And then at some point you're going to end up in an octagon and you shall,
yeah.
or at some point you're going to end up at a comedy club.
Right.
And you're going to have to compete or you're going to try
yeah.
to, trying to find YouTube subscribers or sell
yeah,
books.
Right.
If you're writing a funny book, you're competing with everyone who ever wrote a funny book,
Truth.
But you're really competing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And this notion of trying to, and there's an approach to all that we're speaking of that involves, there's boxers who've put plaster Paris in their hand wraps and gloves and
wow.
created a concrete
just to knock people
out. To bust people up and to win. There's a version of cheating in this discussion we're having
yeah.
in all the different forms, but ultimately you're competing with yourself
mm-hmm.
to then apply that to the world.
That's right. And I also think that, like, yeah, in the end, I mean, specifically with comedy, you know, people find different things funny. And there were a lot of times, especially when I was starting out doing stand-up in like 2012, 2013, where all I had to go on was like the people I've seen. So you start to sound like other people and it takes a long time to sound like yourself on stage. And so there's like a very low ceiling for how well you can do if you're just competing with other people. Like if you're not focusing on why you have something to say or like what story actually matters to you so that you can sell it to an audience, then you're not competing. You're really just like doing a bad imitation and hoping that people don't notice. And I think that the times when I feel the best about what I'm doing, I'm like, well, this is definitely original. Like, even if it's not as good as the very well-produced special someone else is doing, I don't feel bad about being where I am if I'm better than I was last week. Because ultimately, if I get a special and someone else gets a special, different people are going to watch them. Like, we're not going to win everybody.
I think there's a healthy helping from both chafing dishes, which is I used to listen to guys, like local guys doing morning radio, and I'd drive my pickup truck around when I was working construction, and I would think, I'm better than those guys. I could do that. I could do it. I'm not going to get a chance to do it, but I could do it. I could do it better. And then that night, I'd watch like a Dennis Miller Showtime stand-up special. And he'd just be like, rat-a-tat-tat, joke, word I had to look up, joke, word I had to look up, rat-a-tat-tat. And I'd go, I could never do that, I would think to myself.
Yeah.
And so I was always in this place of like, I got to work harder to do that. But I don't think I could do that. That I think I could do.
Yeah.
If it's all just I could never do it or I could do everything, I don't feel like that's the winning combo.
Yeah.
You need a little salt and sugar in there, right?
For sure. And I think that you have to recognize that sometimes things lead to other things, which is a very vague way of saying, like, maybe doing, you know, having the reps of being on the air every day would help you in a scenario where then you're like, oh, I'm not afraid to be very quick on my feet on a stage. If it's not going well, I can do some crowd work, whatever. I think that a lot of it feeds into itself. And so for me, I never thought I'd be a YouTuber. Like, that didn't exist when I was a kid. It happened when I was in college and I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm doing this now. But I wanted to be a comedian and I thought I can probably get okay at this. Like, I can at least be, I hate the word humorist. It always sounds so like pretentious, but like I can be a person who writes funny things and potentially could be great on stage. But I was like, I'll never be an actor. Like, that seems, my emotions are just too far away for me to like access them in a convincing manner. And I think being on stage helped me realize, I'm like, oh, but there are some things that are similar here. And you don't have to win an Academy Award to be an actor. Like you said, there's a billion shows. Like, you can be a working actor. LA is filled with them. They all work at, like, you know, Applebee's. I don't know.
Right.
So there are options. And there's also not, I think that we tend to segment every part of our lives as like either a success or a failure. And I'm like, sometimes they're just that interim period.
Well, also, I agree. And I don't know if you had a plan. I kind of warn people about plans. Your plan is move forward and have your eyes open. And when you come into something where it's like, when I met Jimmy Kimmel, it's like, oh, I'm sticking with this guy because this guy's got something. So when you meet people, you come across these people in your journey, along your journey. There's people you need to get away from, and then there's people you need to hang on to with both hands. And then there's career turns where people go, hey, this is happening now. Yeah. Do you want to whatever? And some of it's a bad idea, and some of it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I don't know that you can have a plan other than get better and keep moving and sort of try to trust your instincts, but you have to develop your instincts.
Yeah, and save a little bit of money.
Save a little money, yeah.
Because I'm like, I never know, you know, like I said, there wasn't YouTube when I was coming up. Podcasts are still relatively new, in the larger entertainment scape. And so when people ask me, like, what do you want in 5 years? I'm like, I don't know what's going to be happening in 5 years. Like, I didn't know 5 years ago that I'd be doing a podcast now. Before that, I didn't know that YouTube was actually going to be a thing that could make money. And so I think that you're right. Like, for me, I'm like, as long as I'm still funny and I don't get like caught up in my own bullshit of like narrating my career and being like, why don't I have things, then I'll probably be fine. But I think planning is kind of weird. And sometimes, you know, you get a career opportunity and it's going great. And then you're like, you realize like we're not a good compatible, like, creative match, or my vision of this is totally different than what they were doing. We just happen to like each other and have the same taste. I don't know if we're going to keep working together. And I think that sometimes in those moments, like, it's fine to like still like a person, but not work together and do the thing you thought you were going to do. And you still find success in other ways. So I tend to feel like I don't really plan. I mean, the podcast that I host, What a Day, it's crooked, like, good plug. I didn't expect it.
I got to highlight that.
No, you're all good. I didn't expect to be a podcast host. I was very happy being just a podcast guest.
Well, you don't know, like, here's the deal. My creative partner is now on his, I don't know, 17th year of hosting a network late night television show at 11:30. Now, what are the chances when you meet this schlubby dude at K-Rock in 1994 that essentially you're not going to be able to sit in an office with that guy all day and crap out TV shows anymore because that guy has a late night network television show. Mm-hmm. So what am I to plan for?
Right.
You know, well, I couldn't see us getting together and being on TV, and then I certainly couldn't see the part where he went off and is doing, you know, he'll do 25 years of late night TV when the dust settles.
Yeah.
Or 30.
Yeah.
And so who could anticipate this?
No one.
Nobody. I mean, it's the craziest. It's like he had to leave because he had to play shortstop for the Yankees. Like it's a low percentage thing, but it happened.
Yeah.
And so you can't plan for it, but the plan is constantly moving forward, it's like you could never, you know, they always say, I always kind of like this example, you know, they say if you get in a horrible accident or you fall off a cliff or skiing or something, if you're in really good shape, you have a much better chance of pulling through it, you know?
God.
They always say that.
Well.
So we don't plan for on it. What I'm saying is if you just exercise and you're in pretty good shape all the time, then if the shit goes down, you got a much better chance of recovering.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's very astute. It's spot on. I tend to feel it the exact same way. In YouTube world, which I, you know, very rarely visit anymore, the sort of very small scale version of what you just described is there's an event called VidCon every year in Anaheim. 30,000 teenagers pile in to meet their favorite creators on YouTube. It's hella sponsored. It's very expensive. It's, you know, the biggest online creator gathering that exists. And every year, there's a new person whose name you're supposed to care about, who is the most viral human on Earth, and wow, their trajectory is just straight up to the moon. And then the next year, without fail, they're not there. No one's talking about them.
Right.
And so what I tend to think about, too, is like everyone's career is going to pop at different moments. And it also, everyone, I mean, like you've had so much longevity, but most people get 2 or 3 good years and then something happens and they fall off. So I think it's hard to plan for, you know, when the world will be excited to see you and if they'll continue to be excited to see you.
Well, I think while you shouldn't be paranoid about it, you should have a little fear, like a little bit of, I'm going to go out and work on this, or I'm going to talk to that person. And you have to have a little sense of like, you know, if I just chillax for 6 months, it's hard to get back in.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, it's like, it's a little like taking a season off professionally in a sport. It's just kind of hard to make a team.
It's
kind of hard to get back, you know. So I always have a sense of like, doesn't matter what year you're in, you have to get up and prove it, you know, that day, that week.
Yeah.
An element of that. And also, for so much of my career, I went, oh, I don't do that. I don't write books or I don't do that. I don't do that. Mm-hmm. Like I kept saying, I'm not that guy. Like I don't do that.
Yeah, that's not what my career is.
And I was like sitting watching the Super Bowl yesterday with Chris Morgan, who does all the Fast and Furious and Hobbs and Shaw movies now, makes all these mega movies, you know. He's a really nice guy. And he's like, he said to me, we should do something together. And I was about to say, I do this and that and that and this. I don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're making mega
movies. Movies that are guaranteed to be number one for several weeks.
Yeah. You
worldwide.
Vin Diesel and The Rock, like on speed dial, if that's even a thing anymore. And I'm like, I don't do that. I was about to do it. And I kind of caught myself. And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Like, let's do something.
Yeah. Why not?
And I don't know if you have ever thought that way.
If
you still think that way?
I think, I mean, especially, so I went on the book tour after it came out in September, and one of the most common questions you get are like, did you always want to be a writer?
Right.
And the truth is no. Like, I hated it in school. I did it you know, after school because once I graduated, because the internet was kind of like coming up and there were lots of places where you could just write a funny thing and it would sit. And, you know, those places still exist. McSweeney's, you know, New York or whatever. And but I never thought, like, I'm going to sit down and write a book. And it took me forever because I never even, like, even as I was writing it, I'm like, who cares? Like, I kept having to ask myself, like, does this matter? Like, does anyone really care about this? But that's not what writing is. You know what I mean? Like, that's a backwards way of looking at it. Like, if you go into writing a book thinking this book isn't a bestseller, it would have been, like, worth nothing. You know, you end up having a bad time, and also people can sense that, and five people buy it, then they, you know, put it on their stoop. So I do think that for the longest time, what John Lovett has called narrating my career, where I'm like, here's what's going to happen. In 5 years, I'm going to get this show, and then I'm going to, like, win an award, and then whatever. He's like, or you could just have a career and see what shows up.
Freakonomics.
Yeah.
John Lovett, right. I was picturing the comedian.
Oh, I'm thinking.
For some reason.
Yeah, wait. Ooh.
Yeah, they're the same name.
You're thinking of Lovett, John Lovett.
Well, yeah,
that's
John
who my
Lovett,
mom thought it was.
And you said Lovett. Right. I just wanted to, for the audience, I'm picturing Freakonomics now. You know, I'll tell you what's a blessing, but I don't know what the origins of your book was. Mm-hmm. I've written a few books because people have come to me and offered me money to write the book. I don't think I would have written a book if someone didn't offer me money.
Exactly the same.
And
exactly the
and
same.
And that's how most people are, or most people who write books, or oftentimes, is the story. But here's my challenge. To people who are listening. How do I get you to write a book without someone coming to you and writing you a check first? Because I'll admit, I wouldn't have written a book. I've written a few books, and I'm really glad I wrote the books, but somebody had to come to me.
Same.
And for most people listening, no one's coming to them.
Right. And I think that is, you know, that's also something that I use to ground myself. I'm like, you should feel pretty okay about your career. Like, they came to me. It was very serendipitous. A girl that I met in an improv class happened to work at a publishing place, and we went to lunch because I was working in the same office building at MTV, and she was at Penguin. And we just had a fun lunch with the head publisher, and they were like, great, so what's your book? And I'm like, I don't have one. And they were like, yeah, you do. Here's some money. So I figured it out. But I think that, you know, what's interesting about our careers is that, you know, you do get to a certain point, and it's obviously, look, I'm not comparing my career to yours, but they trusted me to write a book because they knew that I would deliver one, and I didn't have to show up with all this other stuff because the portfolio was the career up until that point. And so I had to keep reminding myself of that instead of being like, oh man, they've never read anything I've written. They probably are going to regret giving me any money. I'm like, yeah, but they had to have seen something. Like, people don't just write checks. If they did, I would be collecting them all the time.
And it's their idea for you to write a book. I mean,
like, they have an idea in mind of, like, how it will go and how they will market it and what the point is and, you know, the biggest takeaway is and what's the thread. And so I think that, like, you know, maybe that is the saddest thing about the world that we live in, is that there are probably some really great writers who could never get a book agent, who could never have an editor get them to the point where they could, you know, have their book be a bestseller or be something that Oprah wants to talk about one day. But it's also like, you know, we also live in a world where people need the proof, you know? And if you have something that's already successful, they believe you can do something else successful.
Yeah, and the question is how do you get people to come to you to write a book if you don't really have a body of work? And the answer is they're not.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to do what you want to get paid for free for a long while.
That's a word.
Which everybody... does. I try to get people over that pay me thing. Like, every guy I knew who was a horrible student, like, including myself in high school, I hung around with, like, world-class dumbos, and they were horrible students. And every time the teacher would say to them, like, hey, what happens? You know, you're late to your job, or you don't turn stuff in, you're going to – and they would always go – if you're paying me, I would never be late, and I would always, you know, turn my stuff in. And these guys turned out to be the worst employees ever, who were just as late, just as lazy, just as flaky, and they were getting paid. So, like, this notion of, like, somehow if somebody cuts you a check, you're going to turn into a different human
0%.
Being. Yeah, don't get into that habit. Start being that good student of life, and then you will get paid, but don't wait to get motivated.
Money actually isn't the strongest motivator, because if you don't want to do the thing, you're not going to do the thing. Like, I'm sure, like, in the back of my mind, if I just, like, went to the gym every day, I could probably be in a Marvel movie one day, right? But also, I don't want to do that. Like, and the money, maybe I would hire someone to chase me with a knife and then I would get in really good shape. But the chances are good that I'm like, I'm still going to be the same person. It's like, I really hate this. I hate, like, I would love to be in the movie. Someone said it to me this way. A lot of people say that they want to write a book. Most people want to have written a book. Like, they want all of the, like, oh, good for you, you did a book. They don't want to do the writing. Right. I feel that way. I want people to be like, you were in a Marvel movie, not like, I have to work out every day to be in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, you know, I was telling this, I think, to Dr. Drew, but it's an interesting little experiment we should all play on ourselves. Like, what if somebody said, I'll give you $250 for every day you seem happy. Now, I'm just going to, I'll look at a little montage of your day at the end of the day, and then I'll cut you the check. If mm-hmm. I see you moping or complaining or whatever, and you don't have to be running around throwing daisies over your shoulders
right, but
and
just
whistling.
Don't be whining.
But if you seem like this was a good day or you had a happy day or your interactions with other people, I'll give you a check for $250 every day. Most people I know would put it together mm-hmm. and take the money. Mm-hmm. And then what would happen is initially they would probably think they were fooling the eye in the sky. Mm-hmm. But eventually they would turn into a happy person.
Yeah.
And it would probably take about 6 days.
Yeah, that's true.
So with that in mind, I'm really getting into this act as if kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to write, you got to write.
Yeah.
If you want to sing, you got to hit a stage and start singing. Mm-hmm. Or don't tell me you want to do it.
Right.
And don't make it all prerequisite on, did somebody cut me a check?
Right.
It's a flawed system because they're never going to cut you a check at the beginning.
Right. Yeah. Especially when, you haven't proven yourself and you also haven't proven that you would want to continue doing it. I mean, I always say I made 100 YouTube videos before any of them hit, and that was for free on crappy quality webcams where I would go to the Apple store and just record there because it's a free laptop, and I'm like, cool, so I'll put this in and then I'll edit when I get home and whatever. And I don't think that I was necessarily some very smart, motivated kid. It was just well, I know I'm not going to get paid if I don't have videos. If I want a brand deal, they might need to see that I've ever made something. I don't think that, Budweiser is giving out $40,000 to people who have never put anything out that would suggest that they even like beer,
Right.
So I think that because I was already not making money at that point, I was well, I might as well do what I want for free since my job is at the mall or, doing marketing for a local company. If I won't be happy unless I'm doing this thing. Hopefully the money comes, but, even if it doesn't, I liked it enough to keep doing it. I also always believed it would happen. I think it just takes a while to find things. To your point earlier, we're living in a time where we're so oversaturated with just stuff that I'm like, I think if you build it, they will come. You just have to really build it and be patient.
I did a late for me set at the Comedy Store last Saturday, 11:30, a little late for grandpa with the kids, And I remember driving there, I live far away. Mm-hmm. I was driving, getting my car on a Saturday night, just 11 o'clock at night, just 10:45. And I was low on gas. I was God damn it, I gotta get gas. So I get it in Hollywood. Do I get it where I live? And I remember just going up there and I did 15 minutes and I just turn around. I remember having this fleeting thought, do they pay you? Sometimes you get paid, sometimes you don't get paid. I went to the Laugh Factory, and there's a whole stack of checks for $45 that were made out to me that are 18 checks for $45. I had this fleeting thought, but then I saw all these other pretty well-known. So I saw some other comedians. I saw mm-hmm. Chris D'Elia and Tom Segura and mm-hmm. guys like that. And I thought, oh, they're all here performing for free mm-hmm. on a Saturday night. And then I was talking to Tom Segura, and he's like, oh, I'm moving out of the Valley. We got a place in the Palisades. And I'm like, okay, well, it sounds like somebody's making some money.
Something's going well.
And I thought, we had a nice chat about cars, and he was tricking out his car. And then I was like, oh, you're here for free, and you're tricking out your car, and you got a new house. And then I'm here for free, and all these guys are here for free, but they're going out and getting paid in other places.
Mm-hmm.
So don't make it contingent upon getting, like, don't make the money.
Yeah. I mean, the value isn't just the money, because like a $45 check isn't going to get you a house.
No.
But the stage time where you get to work out material and then you get to go on a bomb ass tour, that could make you a ton of money. That could, you know what I mean? Like, I think that you're absolutely right. It's, I think that we often overlook practice as a good thing, where they're like, oh, I don't want to practice, I just want to be a pro. And I'm like, yeah, but the practice, like, that's valuable. The fact that you get to be in front of an audience, even if it's like, you know, late at night, far away, you're in a room with people that like know you, they, you know them, and.
Well, you get to do stand up at probably the premier club in the world.
Yeah.
And on a Saturday night.
And there are children outside, like, I say children, but like, 20-year-olds that would kill to have even 2 minutes
right.
to just say their one bad joke, get booed off stage and be like, I did it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to, people would say, you know, back in the day, they'd go, what's Dr. Drew really like? And I'd go, he's just as you experience him. That's exactly who he is. And then they'd go, what's it like traveling around with Dr. Drew? And I used to play colleges everywhere, and we'd mm-hmm. be sitting next to each other on flights for 6 hours. And I'd say, I get to sit next to Dr. Drew and have a conversation with him for 5 hours on a flight. That's what I get to do.
Yeah.
Because there's not many guys, maybe only Jimmy Kimmel, mm-hmm. would you like to sit on a long flight with and talk to.
Yeah.
Because they're so smart, they're mm-hmm. interesting, and they're whatever you find. These, some of them you find these truths, and then you find some comedy or whatever it is. So I'm not bragging. What I'm saying is I was trying to go, oh, I got to go to this college and do work a weekend. I was going, I could sit next to Dr. Drew, or mm-hmm. I could sit next to Jimmy. We get to talk about life.
Yeah, we get to like hang out with your buds who you also really respect.
And you get to go up on stage for free. You don't have to. You get the opportunity to mm-hmm. do that.
And to a stage where people are paying to see you, not just like, you know, the corner yelling.
Right. So start processing things through the lens of I get to mm-hmm. write a book, not mm-hmm. I have to write a book or whatever. Because writing a book can get really tedious if you can let it get away from you you can start to you can start seeing like it's a big shadow mm-hmm. in the hallway and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm climbing out the window.
I hope I don't post a tweet. They're going to know I'm not writing the book.
Right. Like, you have to have that relation, but you have to eventually have that with kids, spouses, neighbors, society.
Yeah. I think life is like truly about, like seeing, not just optimism, but I think that like there is a level of appreciation that, you know, you just have to remind yourself of hosting a daily news podcast. There are days when I'm like, the news sucks and I'm tired and I don't want to do this. I'm like, yeah, but I get to work with like some of the best people in this industry. Who knows who's going to be in the office? People send snacks all the time. Like, I would have killed for this job every day before today.
Of course.
Are you kidding? Like,
of course. It's good to have. I do feel sorry for people that don't have the perspective of being poor, or being miserable, or being not having air conditioning, or whatever
or
that is, or heat, or a car with air,
mm-hmm. or a car at all.
Or a car at all. Like, zero perspective, so mm-hmm. then I have any place to jump off from. You, in a way, it's a it's a blessing to grow up poor to mm-hmm. some degree. It's not a blessing to be poor as an adult.
Right, yeah, it's not great.
But growing up poor is good. I mm-hmm. think that's a good kind of base to build off of.
I think that it has definitely given me an edge. I grew up in a single parent household with four kids, one of whom, I mean, we were all smart. I love this all. But my oldest sister went to Stanford, and my mom was like, well, I'm going to figure out how to pay for that. So, like, we were broke.
Right.
There was never money. We lived in Kentucky. Like, the highest paying job was like 50 cents an hour. Like, we were poor. But what I remember thinking as I got older, I was like, man, I'm never going to experience this again. Like, I refuse to feel this way again.
Yeah, I agree. And then there's that thing where it's like, but I don't want to go full J-Lo where I'm like working out 17 hours a day and always feeling like something is chasing me, you know, like I want a balance of I'm going to work really hard. I'm never going to go back to that place with no air conditioning and no food. But
I do want to relax.
I want to crack a beer on a Sunday and watch a ball game and not think about anything.
Yeah, like, I want to
give myself that privilege.
Yes.
Are you good at balancing that?
Oh, yeah. I think that, like, maybe too good, maybe I need to go a little in the other direction, because I am the person who I'm like, never diet. Like, who cares? And, you know, I think I work hard, but I'm also, I have a lot of leisure time. I was talking before the show about this video game that I started playing, and I'm like, it feels productive in ways. And so I there are things where I know that I could be, you know, more hungry and whatever else, but I'm also like, this is, you know, probably the least encumbered I'm ever going to be. I'm not married. I don't have kids. I live in a house with a bi-coastal friend who's never home. And I'm like, I should really relax and enjoy it, because life continues on. You know, there's going to be problems. Trust me. And this feels like a nice, stable time. So I'm like, I give myself a little bit of grace in that way. I also think that, you know, after writing a book, my ambitions in entertainment haven't totally shifted, but I'm like, I know that there's value outside of being the star of something. Like, mm-hmm. I know that, like, and it sounds weird getting that from a book where that's all about me, but it's like, it's a book. It's not my face. It's not just, you know, someone having to buy into something. There are people who don't like the book, so that's fine. And I'm like, I could write a show. I could potentially executive produce one day. I could come up with other options for this career that aren't so, you know, tasking. Yeah.
Well, last question.
We're having such a good conversation. This was the most natural podcast I've ever been on.
I agree. I really like getting to know people. Mm-hmm. I worry, but I want to hear your perspective on it. You know, there's always that thing where, like, as a woman or a woman of color, mm-hmm. you have to work twice as hard to overcome and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And I always think it's such a depressing message, because being told you're not going to be able to do something because you're born this way. Mm-hmm. And I don't suffer from that. I suffer from a depressed version of that, which is, you're Corolla. They never do anything. Aww. No one does anything. You know,
even
you
more can't personal. Do
anything. Yeah, we never do anything. So I get the version of that thing of this feeling like, well, success is for other people. Yeah. It's not for us. Mm-hmm. But personally, as young black female, how much of that do you internalize? Mm-hmm. Do you think about it? Do you ever think about it? Or do you just choose to not think about it, move forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both. So I would say I'm aware of it. And insofar as, like, you know, I can pitch a project and hear nothing back, and then the same project, but maybe a little worse, will come out a few years later. And I'm like, okay, so, like, they see that for someone else. But I also think that a nice part of the entertainment industry is that it's hard to take things personally, because people have a vision of what they want. And if you're not it, there's really not much you can do about it. Like, so I think that on some granular level, to your point, you don't have to be a young black woman to feel like, oh, well, they pictured this lead in a movie to be someone who looked different in some way, whatever. Because we still feel the same way in our own lives, right? Like, if you go wedding dress shopping, there are dresses that aren't going to get picked. They're not worse. They're just different.
Yeah. Well, I don't think people know just how much flat out rejection there is.
Endless. Every day of my life. Like, I'm like, I just put on my turn signal and no one's letting me over. So I guess I live in the valley now. Like, I have to.
Yes. I mean, someone just said to me the other day, what happened to the British production company that did, like, the Great British Bake Off, mm-hmm. wanted to do some sort of woodworking show, and I'm a carpenter, so that we were getting together with these great producers, and we're going to go pitch it to this and pitch it that. We went out in a week, must have pitched it to 10, you know, entities. Mm-hmm. And then someone said to me the other day, what happened with the British Bake Off producers and the tea? And I go, nothing.
Yeah,
I go, but weren't you guys out pitching, and then you did the whole thing, you went to History, and oh, you went over to Quibi, and you mm-hmm. went over to Hulu, and it's like, yeah, we went to 13 places.
Yeah.
Like, what happened? Nothing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I've had shows totally rejected. Some of the best meetings I've ever had with anybody,
oh my
with the
God.
Coolest people.
Yes,
and you're like, I would love
nodding,
this.
It keeps going on.
Yeah, and you're like, this is it.
They go, like, I named my daughter Natalia. Your daughter's named Natalia? Yeah. We named our daughter's Natalia.
One time a dog laid on my lap, and I, like, dogs don't like me. And she was like, my dog doesn't like anyone. I'm like, this is it.
I know. And then 7 weeks goes by, and you go, what happened to the Amazon people? And they go, I don't know. I haven't heard it. Nothing.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, there is a level of rejection, and also just, like, you have to keep going in this industry that, you know, you can't really dwell on the fact that, like, I'm this so people don't like me. Or like I can't have things. I also think it's been disproven plenty of times.
I always tell people my real white privilege at being a heterosexual white male
tall,
is
has all your hair.
Have all my hair is knowing that I just took meetings with 13 places. None of them are interested in our killer TV show. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with my skin or mm-hmm. my sexuality mm-hmm. or my proclivities. It's just they didn't want my show.
Yeah.
And that's my privilege. Yeah. I get to know that. I don't have to go, oh, it's because I'm gay. That's why they didn't want to.
Right.
Whatever. I didn't have. That's my privilege. Yeah. I get to keep moving on and go, they didn't like the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, like, in show business, I think it's easy to sort of separate. I think, like, you know, when I was working at like a local coffee company and I did get the job and everyone was like, why is this black person not in the warehouse? like there was a moment of like, oh, they didn't see this for me, but I'm doing it and the company's doing great because of my dumb marketing ideas. So like, I think that I've always been aware of it. And I also like, I kind of talk about it in the book. There's a chapter about cheerleading, and I was an excellent cheerleader as a child. Like, I loved choreography. I was a little kid. My mom worked at the school, and I would just practice with the sixth graders. Like, I was in it, and I never made the team. Years later, like in high school, my mom picked me up, and she's like, oh, what was going on after school? I'm like, those cheerleading tryouts, but I'm not going to do that. It's not, like, who I am anymore. She's like, you know you never made the team because of me. And I'm like, what? And she's like, oh, well, I fired the coach from the elementary school because she was like saying inappropriate things around the kids. I don't know. But I, the whole time, my mentality was, I'm black. I'm not the skinniest kid out here. I'm poor. I don't shop at Limited 2. I don't look like the other cheerleaders. And so I think that there was a part of me that thought, well, I guess I'm just not good enough. Mm-hmm. Like, you internalize those messages because you think it's that. And sometimes it really isn't, you know, and that helps. But I think, you know, sometimes on a smaller scale, like in a world where things aren't as lucrative, it's a lot more apparent when that is the case. But, you know, to your question of, you know, do I harp on it? Do I think about it? Or do I kind of keep it moving? I have an absurd amount of self-confidence, truly. And I don't know where it comes from. I think that it's probably because I've seen people who are mediocre do things, because I also know that, like, if I don't get this thing, there's a million other things I could try because, like, you know, the career that I have didn't exist. So I'm like, oh, things can happen. Mm-hmm. Amazing things can happen. And so I guess I just don't get bogged down by it. But I also get, I think people get tired of the conversation about it because, for one, it's been disproven plenty of times. You know, there are lots of people on top who look like me, who are doing great things, movies that do well, that star people of color. It's, you know, we had a black president once. Sure. Don't know if we'll ever get another one. One time. But I think the other part of it, too, is that, like, I think everyone's greatest hope, and this goes for people of any identity, is that one day it really won't matter. Like, you won't have to talk about it. It won't be you did this first as the first person of this whatever to do this thing. Mm-hmm. We all just want to make shows and, you know, make products and do whatever without it having to be about that. And that's, I think, the freest thing that maybe white men get to have sometimes is, like, it doesn't, like, you could sell a show that's about something that's not about being a white person. I think the hardest thing is we're in a period now where black people get lots of things, but we still have to tell the same stories. We have to do a movie about slaves. We got to do a movie about this. Everything has to be oppression.
It's kind of, like I said, our real privilege. Yeah. Like, I got to sit down with Jimmy Kimmel so many years ago, and we go, what kind of show do we want to do?
Yeah, whatever we
We ended up doing The Man Show.
Yeah.
But it was really just a show about us getting our balls busted, mostly by women. But the point is we got to do what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And we didn't need to, like, focus on our heritage or message or brand or anything. We just went, I love working with you. He's like, I love working with you. What kind of show would we do if we could just do a show together?
Yes.
And this is the show we would do. And who would you hire?
Right.
And we had, you know, The Man Show, for instance, had a ton of females that worked on the show. Mm-hmm. So many of the producers, so many directors, because they had a good handle on comedy and what was going on. But also, the thing that a lot of people I don't think really realize is, like, our two main producers were Jennifer Heffler and I'll think of her partner's name in a second, but they were just good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they got shit done.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of, like, at the end of the day, when you're trying to produce a show,
yeah,
and you got to crank out 23 episodes or whatever, you want people that are good.
Yeah.
You don't really care if they look like you or
right,
not. You just want fucking people that know how to work.
Yeah.
And at kind of the end of the day, that's what it was about.
Right.
Whether it was a director or anybody,
mm-hmm,
the boss may go, oh, I like this guy because he's a Rams fan and I'm a Rams fan. But at the end of the day,
can't get his job done.
I need a Steelers fan who can kick ass.
Yeah.
Doing this.
Amen.
Yeah. A good note to go out on. Obviously.
Today. I'm sorry. I can't land on Steelers.
Stories from my timeline. It's available now as mm-hmm we speak. And whenever you hear this on Amazon, just go to Amazon.
Give Jeff Bezos the $20 or however much
Jesus
it costs
Christ
now. 50 cents. Who knows?
Well, once we get Andrew Yang in there, we'll fix all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Don't you worry. Akilah Hughes, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll take a break. We'll be back with the news right after this.
Spend Tuesdays with Dr. Drew.
Hey, let's suggest you listen to the Dr. Drew podcast. It comes out every Tuesday. And it is my chance to, I love doing it, it's my chance to really dig into people and find out what makes them tick, what's going on. It's a long form where we can get into material and topics that I just can't get into anywhere else. And it's a privilege to be able to spend that time really getting in deep. So please join me on the Dr. Drew podcast.
The Dr. Drew podcast, every Tuesday on Corolla Digital and Podcast One.
Bring the sabor with new Modelo Chelada Fresa Picante. A mouth-watering mix of authentic Mexican beer, bold strawberry flavor, and a hint of spice. New Modelo Chelada Fresa Picante. Bring the sabor. Drink responsibly. Modelo Chelada flavored beers. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, normally I wouldn't start here, but since we're just going to wrap up some of the Super Bowl news, guards at the Santa Rita Jail in California say they dashed prisoners' plans for a boozy little Super Bowl when they confiscated all of the ingredients used to make jailhouse alcohol, a.k.a. Pruno. I mean, just they said it was over 20 giant trash bags. A photo post on Instagram, which we're looking at by Alameda County Sheriff's Office on Saturday, shows about two dozen officers standing behind at least 20 bags of what the sheriff's called illegally made jailhouse alcohol from juice and fruit. One bag appears to be full of oranges. Who knows what's in the rest? The sheriff post, quote, "There will be no Super Bowl party at Santa Rita Jail tomorrow. Good work by our team on duty today." The bust was made the day before the game, and what a bum out, man.
But
don't be proud of that.
A couple things. If you can get married in jail and you can have conjugal visits in jail, then you can get drunk in jail.
This is ingenuity, man.
And also, what are you going to do? Like, oh, he's going to drive that bus filled with children later on today. Like, you're not going anywhere. Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to take an extra piss.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out.
We made Pruno one time on the morning show. It's horrible. And what I heard on, Brian Suit said this on the air today. Sometimes when you don't have another way to ferment it, they will just spit into it because the yeast from your mouth ferments it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
I'm getting notes of tooth decay.
Yeah.
Gingivitis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that a metal filling?
It's notes of skull.
So this has swept Twitter in the last day or two. I have been
sports ball?
Mm-hmm. Very, very curious following this, seeing where it goes. And now it's making mainstream news. Do not know if you guys have heard this. Amber Heard has been caught on tape admitting she hit Johnny Depp during their relationship. You know, the relationship that she wrote a statement about, you know, being a, you know, a survivor of domestic abuse because of him. And, well, that might not totally be the story. So in the 2015 audio published by Britain's Daily Mail, the actress confesses to getting physical with him and pelting him with pots and pans and vases. He's very calm during the whole thing. Yeah. So
wasn't there footage of him throwing something at her?
He was kind of drunk and like smashed one of his like kind of swiped one of his wine bottles.
Right.
But I don't know that I don't remember if he threw it at her. I think he, from what I remember, he kind of swiped it. I could be wrong. Mm. But I listened to the whole thing. It's about 47 minutes. Here's 1 minute. This is the one that's getting most of the play. This is one of the quotes that's picking up a lot of speed, but there are many, but here's one.
Who do you have it?
I said to Travis, I said to you, hey, tell Travis what just happened.
You told me to do it. Told me to. You said, go do that.
I said, no, tell him what just happened.
And I lied.
And that you punched me in the fucking thing and
you figured
in
it
the
out.
Face. And you said, no, fucking, no, I didn't. What the fuck are you talking about? And I watched you lie. And then
I didn't punch you, and then I'm sorry that I didn't.
Punched
you
me.
Across the face in a proper slap, but I was hitting you. It was not punching you. Babe, you're not punched.
Don't tell me what it feels like to be punched.
You know, even a lot of fights been around a long time. I know.
Yeah, no, I, when you fucking have a closed fist.
You get punched. You got hit. I'm sorry I hit you like this, but I did not punch you. I did not fucking deck you. I fucking was hitting you.
You can't.
I don't know
deck
what
me.
The motion of my actual hand was, but you're. Fine. I did not hurt you. I did not punch you. I was hitting you.
So there's a lot of that in there. He's very calm the whole time and saying, can you please just, if you have a problem, please address me nicely. Why is everything throwing things and yelling
Who
at me?
Who's recording this?
I mean, I imagine him.
Probably him.
He's recording it.
So
okay.
Obviously he's going to stay on the calmer side. But there's a lot of, for anyone who's been in like weird relationships or knows mm-hmm. people who are in weird relationships, a lot of circular logic, a lot of gaslighting from her. So this is, I don't know if this is going to go away anytime soon. The audio hit the internet with the hashtag justice for Johnny Depp, which is how I found it, trending on Twitter. Fans showed support for him. Johnny and Amber have both been accused of domestic violence since they divorced in 2016. This did hurt his career, though, and seems no one believed him. But
he got accused of throwing his cell phone at her. That was I knew right. He threw something or something.
You guys want to hear my 8 best justice for Johnny Depp hashtag?
Yes.
Oh, is it something happened in the relationship? Hashtag Johnny. I mean, it's not great. It's not great.
It's great to know, though, that everyone is a chaotic piece of shit. Like back in the day, you know, Marilyn Monroe was suffering horribly, but nobody knew about it until long after she was dead. You know, like everyone's life's a chaotic piece of shit.
Old school.
I also started thinking, a few short months ago, getting back to the Super Bowl commercials, if you would have said to me, like, what's Robert De Niro or Martin Scorsese like? I'd go, mystery geniuses. They're both geniuses, and I know nothing of them. And now I feel like I know way too much about it. Like, Scorsese's doing commercials for Coke, you know, where he's hanging out at a party, making an ass of himself, and De Niro's on The View going, fuck Donald Trump, fuck that guy, I gotta lick my fucking balls. And it's like, I used to just think of you guys as geniuses who were like cloaked in secrecy. Yeah. I didn't know anything about you, and I liked it that way.
There was a glamour to it.
Yeah, don't you feel like I went through all the way De Niro all the way through his career and Scorsese, just thinking they're quietly writing their next great movie right now or something. Now they've been way too human.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
We don't like our celebs human.
I want a little distant.
I like it.
You know what I mean? If Amber Heard was slapping me, I would run.
Yeah.
But it'd be hard to run with a boner. That chick is hot.
That ballast would be throwing you all over the place.
Yep. I'd be like the backup dancer for Lizzo on SNL.
Are you ready to get the bends in a way you are not going to like?
Mm-mm.
Page Six reports that an ex-actress who claims Harvey Weinstein raped her told a court at his trial Friday that his genitalia was so deformed she actually pitied him, and that she shot and that he shot his penis with an erection drug moments before the alleged attack. Man went on to say that Weinstein, quote, has extreme scarring that I didn't know if maybe he was a burn victim, but it didn't make sense. He does not have testicles, and it appears like he has a vagina.
I just threw up in my mouth.
Man said when she first saw Weinstein naked, she did perform consensual oral sex on him, and then she went on and on about, you know, the pity and all this stuff. Even though Mann and Weinstein occasionally did have consensual sexual encounters, she claims he raped her twice. Weinstein is only charged with one of the alleged sex attacks, and it is on record that he has a burned vagina.
Well, when guys get really heavy, things start to shift around down there. And
Do tell.
Oh, it's like fat guys with cock eyes. You know what I mean? Like, no pun intended. Like, with the eye that faces the other way.
Yeah, but
it's a fat guy thing.
There's
show a picture of Biggie Smalls.
There's a couple things.
Show a picture of.
But is that because of weight gain?
Of Uncle Phil from Jackass. Fat guys have fucked up eyes.
Come on.
The more you know.
Okay, when you get heavy, you have higher levels of circulating estrogen, so your dick actually gets smaller, and then the penis and the flesh around it gets larger.
Sure.
So, like, if you ever see the fat guy at the Y, like, coming out of the shower, those guys always have small dicks.
Like a little button.
Yeah, it's like a little button look. I don't know about the burned part. There's the botched circumcision part where sometimes some guys' circumcisions are a little rough.
Go awry.
I don't know if he had some McDonald's coffee between his legs and hit a speed bump. Like, I don't know what went on there. Yeah. But
hashtag fat guys.
More than ever, I rolled this out on Loveline 20 plus years ago. My condom with the birthmark on him.
Yeah, it's genius.
Fucking genius.
Listen up, rapists everywhere.
Yeah.
Rape culturists.
You wear that condom that comes with the very distinct birthmark built into the condom, and that chick will go, he's got this big thing. It's like shape of Florida. It's right on top. You just pull your wang out right in the court, and everyone's like, oh, and the gavel smash. And
you must have quit.
Yeah, you must have quit.
Done.
That's
a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Not ribbed for your pleasure. That's what I would say about my birthmark condoms.
So we were joking about this. Andy Harris and I were joking. Is it one of those things like the Brady, you know, courtroom scene where the guy has the neck brace on and Mike Brady throws the attaché and he turns
his head?
Were they trying to?
That was Uncle Fester.
Thank you. Oh,
yeah,
oh my God!
Same actor.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Were they trying to bait Harvey into being like, that's not what my dick looks like? You know, it's
Wouldn't
this is the best day of my life?
Look, if your dick is dick figured, it's going to be a repeated theme amongst the ladies that are up there taking the stand.
Yes.
Right?
We've only heard this now.
It's going to be something that you would. It's going to be a common. If there's something different about your dick, I would say that the women are going to tell the same story for the most part.
Yeah.
Assuming there was, eye to eye, so to speak.
Although, remember, a lot of these forced sexual encounters are him forcing oral on women.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Pamela Anderson has split from her 74-year-old husband, John Peters.
What?
In 12 days.
I was going to say, it's been 2 weeks.
Just shy of a fortnight. In a statement, the actress said that they're putting off the formalization of their marriage certificate, and Pam thanks us for respecting her privacy. The day after the secret nuptials, her publicist told People Magazine they're very much in love. They were married yesterday. The Hollywood Reporter said the split was abrupt, with Pam jumping on a flight back to Canada on Saturday morning, quote, just days after posting a loving shot of herself and the movie producer on her Instagram.
She may be, you know, there's a group of mostly chicks I like to keep my eye on who are going to be nuts at some point, provide a lot of entertainment for us. You know, it's a... Heather Locklear syndrome, you know.
Pam Anderson back then.
Yeah, Pam Anderson is going down that road.
Yeah.
She's going to provide a lot. There's an insane when you have to transition from everybody in the world wants to fuck you to not that many people want to fuck right. you. She's not really there yet, but mm-hmm. eventually she'll transition, and that scrambles the brain.
Yeah. I wonder, I'm looking up his name because now it escapes me. I wonder, I'm making this up, by the way. This is totally just an editorial. If she said, no, I really, my heart is with WikiLeaks guy.
Right. Julian Assange. Yeah. Right.
Because there was a, you know, she was a staunch supporter of him, and that completely went away, that story.
Right.
So we wish them the best. Hope they get back together.
Yeah, we do. We're rooting for them.
Yeah. Facebook says it will start taking down bogus claims about purported cures and other unproven theories surrounding the coronavirus as the deadly outbreak continues to spread globally, sparking a surge of online misinformation.
I keep hearing it's basically the flu kills more people, and we shouldn't be that freaked out by it.
It's possible, but the number, and obviously people who are, you know, immunocompromised, you are probably not going to die from it.
Flu claims a lot of people every right. year. This is just no. that. Or it's not going to do the same number as the flu. I mean, what we're doing is we're spinning this up. We don't need to spin
so
it up.
So do you think that the flight cancellation is just alarmist stuff? And the celebration of Chinese New Year cancellation.
Oh, there is. Yeah. Maybe within China, I guess. I don't know. I hear varied reports. But a lot of the reports I hear is we are spinning. I mean, to be fair, the news has to spin you up to get ratings. Well, they just have to. So we are then. Since none of us are, you know, viral scientists, and we don't have boots on the ground, and we don't really know what's going on, then all we can do is watch the news, and the news is going to ratchet it up.
Right. But
and I've heard from a few sources, like a Dr. Drew of the world, who's not into or is not getting paid to ratchet right. things up, that it's like the flu and we should all calm down.
But then, on the other side of that, there's also the theory of, like, it's China. Like, how do we even know that the numbers are as low as they're claiming they are? There's nothing in it for them to not protect their image.
I don't know, but the mask doesn't stop you from getting stuff. It stops you from pushing stuff out, like why surgeons wear masks. So right. don't bother. All right.
I won't.
What's next?
Meghan Markle has scored her first TV gig after breaking away from the British royal family. She'll make multiple appearances on a Canadian reality show about second weddings. That's according to Page Six. She'll join her best friend, Toronto wedding stylist Jessica Mulroney, on the upcoming Netflix show I Do Redo. According to a press release, the 10-part series, quote, revisits first-time wedding disasters before remaking the wedding of their dreams for 10 devoted couples. Meghan has experienced second weddings, by the way. You know, Prince Harry is her second husband, following her 2013 divorce from producer and agent Trevor Angleson. So now she's a reality star again.
He's got a book deal probably in the makes.
One would think.
Are they just backing up the Brinks truck to her to get her to do a reality show, or is she just like this girl and want to do it?
Didn't you see that red carpet clip of them going to some premiere and Harry chatting up Iger from Disney? Being like, you know, my wife, she does voiceover. She'd love to do something with you. So I think she wants to get in the game.
No, I know she wants to get in the game, but this seems like a weird place. Like,
it's tasteful, quote unquote. She's talking about weddings. And, you know, I don't think it's a lot of controversy for her. But I don't know.
I don't know. I'm back to Scorsese. I don't want him in dumb commercials for Coke.
He's been doing commercials for years.
Has he?
Yeah. I think he's been a few.
Yeah, he has. Possibly, you're right. Yeah, in Super Bowl. I don't like it.
Bored with you with the De Niro thing, though. Like, for my entire childhood, it was like, ooh, this genius, you know, taciturn actor, you know, who doesn't like to talk. And it's like, now it's like, he can't get the guy to shut up.
It just seems like an angry truck driver or something. Like, I know. He just somebody... Something happened. Somebody just ripped the lid off the foil off the can of peanuts, and he's going nuts now. Maybe it's a thing where it's like, I'm going to die. I got to get in as much as I can. But I don't know. I like that thing where it's like,
imagine Stanley Kubrick.
There's a time in, like, Tab Hunter. Like, look at that guy. So good looking. Yeah. You know the ladies.
A man's man.
But he's a confirmed bachelor. He doesn't have time to settle down. But would you like to win a date to go to the premiere with Tad?
Swoon.
Tab Hunter? Oh, he's a dreamer.
Oh, like, he's a dreamer.
Montgomery Cliff. No lady can nail him down.
That's right. Sorry, ladies. Liberace's a confirmed bachelor. Finds only his mother's love. It's like, I don't know. I know it's wildly naive, but I don't know. I don't like knowing everything about everybody.
Yeah. I don't want to ask or tell.
That's right. That's what I feel. All right. Let me hit Shopify. This podcast is brought to you by Shopify and Truff Hot Sauce and A Good Company and millions of other businesses. Why? Because we're sponsored by Shopify, and they do everything they can do to support independent businesses on their platform. So they include them in their sponsorship. We use Shopify for all our online merch, and we love it. See all the ways Shopify is supporting independence at shopify.com/independence. That's shopify.com/independence. Shopify, supporting independence. You're independent, and go hit up shopify.com/independence. All right, Gina, one more.
All right. Well, a 100,000-square-foot home in Bel Air, California, that's said to be the most expensive home in the U.S., at $500 million, will hit the market soon, according to Fox News. I'll show you what that kind of house looks like. It's nicknamed The One. It's an opulent hilltop home. It sits on a gated 4-acre property, includes 18 bedrooms, 25 bathrooms. And here's what else it has.
It's a giant fire pit.
Yeah. And look at that library. A giant theater, multiple swimming pools, water features, waterfalls, a massive library, built-in bookshelves, a spa with a steam room and a jacuzzi, a whole nightclub, a 20-car garage, tennis court, multi-lane bowling alley, jellyfish aquariums, wine cellar, game room, billiard rooms, pool house, and a 3-bedroom guest house with its own spa and pool for a cool $500 million.
I'll guarantee that whoever owns that, whoever buys that for $500 million, the very first night they do theater night where they're going to show a first-run movie, nothing works. I guarantee it. My daughter called me the other day. It's just like into the theater. It's brand new. Everything's brand new. It's like TV remote. Dad, what's going on? Like, bolt it. Roll the batteries around. No. Replace the batteries. Hold it. Shut the boot. Reboot. Hit the breaker, hit it, fire it up, pointing at the stereo, pointing at the projector, and pointing at Natalia, like nothing. It's like, all right, well, it's Friday night.
Enjoy our theater.
No theater for you.
Say you need popcorn.
Thank you for interrupting. It's just, it doesn't work, then it does work. That's how it works. It's just how it works. We're not there yet. It just doesn't work. I don't... Then, like, you talk to Ed, and he'll go like, oh, yeah, I can just reboot your remote or something. I can do it remotely. And it's like, okay, but why the reboot?
Why?
Like, why does this happen so often? And the answer is we're over our skis. It's simple.
Yeah. We want to get there.
They go, the promise outreaches.
You're just going to hit that one button, and that's going to take all the drapes, and they're going to automatically close, and then the projector's going to come down from the ceiling, and then the screen's going to come down, and then you think of your favorite movie, and then that'll be the movie that'll be playing, and then you press the button, and nothing happens.
Error.
And then everyone is such a junkie when it comes to their tech stuff, like your TV goes out or you can't watch that movie or whatever it is.
Ruined.
You're such a junkie that there's no punitive part of it. Like, you don't call the guy and go, hey, fucker, I gave you a fucking ton of cash. And then you go,
get your ass down here.
What are you doing now? And they go, I'm eating with my wife.
I need a fucking fix.
I'll blow you. Could you come down and reboot this thing? Like, please, please. Because you're such a junk. All you want it to do is work. And at this point, when they then get the thing to work that doesn't work all the time, now they're the hero.
That's right.
We shouldn't have ever been down that road.
Would it work that way with your front door? Like, if the carpenter hung your front door, like, oh, the deadbolt never works and things always drying on the ground, when he fixed it, would you call him a hero if you had to keep coming back and fixing it? Or would you go, hey, fucker, learn how to hang a door? Tired of this shit.
But we don't know when I would. Yeah, I'd call him a hero, but you wouldn't because you're a carpenter. Yeah. We don't know how to handle the electronics, so he's a hero.
Well, it's yes. And the door's mechanical, and you got to lift it, but you fix it or whatever it is. But yes, all you want it to do, all you want it to be is right again or fixed, and we're just not there. And I have no fucking idea why we're not there. We are not there.
It's a Sisyphean thing. We'll never be there. Like, as soon as a new thing comes out, it's just beyond our grasp, you know, of mastery.
Yes. And what we should be doing is going, look, I want this to be the best system circa 2008. Because everyone's
That'd be
like,
great.
What they do is they go, you know what the future is? The future doesn't work because we haven't worked it out. You know what I mean? You're going to you're going to have the first car with air conditioning in it.
Give me 2011's best.
Right. That's what it is. Give me a little analog. Yeah. I don't need. And what they do is they go, what we do is we daisy chain all the TVs. So it's like, let's just say you're watching your show in this room and then you move to that show. You could pause it. And then I say, I don't need that. I want it to work every time in the room I'm in.
Yeah. Just this one.
I don't watch TV shows and go, man, I wish I was in another room some of the time.
this room's sucks. Getting boring.
Yeah. I hate this ottoman. I wish I could go to another room and watch 12 minutes of this and then return to this room again.
See if this improves any when I come back.
Yeah, I don't have that impulse. Yeah. I'm quite the opposite. I'm like, I'm going to shut the door, put a towel under it. With people sniffing me.
I'm boarding up.
That's right. All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
I'm so warm and dry.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. Simply Safe. Go to simplysafe.com/Adam and get yourself set up with some free shipping. It's simplysafe.com. Uppity, my movie's on Rotten Tomatoes now. If you guys want to give it a rating, you can give it an audience rating. And it's coming out on Netflix, I think, tomorrow, if you guys want to check that out.
Can't believe we saw it like three cruises ago.
I know.
Yeah. It was really good.
Good, thank you. And you can go to, let's see, what are you, Uppity?
Burned Vagina?
Oh, yeah. What do I want to say? Oh, Chassis, Chassy, and see it there. I'm your emotional support animal. It's available now on Amazon for pre-order. Cleveland, Indianapolis, St. Louis, all coming up in February. Live shows there. So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Christy Bishop and Akila Hughes and Gina Grandball Ryan saying mahalo.
That's not what my dick looks like.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow the Ace Man on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You'll also find him on Facebook there. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and subscribe to Take an E for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Just click on the link at adamcarolla.com for tickets and info on everything. Go to adamcarolla.com.